Can you imagine taking all this data and now using AI to, you know, weaponize it against you or somehow use it, you know, in some nefarious ways?
There's someone at Steak and Shake high up who's like, guys, this is the differentiator. Like, we can be the first mover on something really big.
Even if she doesn't like Bitcoin, right? She doesn't love Bitcoin. Imagine having the balls to go and make a documentary about something without doing any research at all.
My teeth are pretty scarce and pretty useful, but they're not worth billions of bucks.
For me, I was always raised, you know, with the concept that if you don't understand something, like, keep your mouth shut. But I guess nobody gave her that memo.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony with me. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the news. Alrighty, up first, we've got The Atlantic, which is not a publication I would generally trust, but they have an interesting point that they raise about Doge, and that is the Trump administration pooling data on Americans and experts. You know, we know and love and trust the experts. Fear what comes next. All that said, jokes aside about The Atlantic and the experts, probably a fair point to raise. You know, we saw the NSA spying program on Americans years ago, and my impression is that this has never ceased. But with what Doge is doing, trying to uncover waste, fraud, and abuse, and also, you know, ICE rounding up illegal immigrants, that sort of thing. Hopefully illegal immigrants doesn't get us banned from YouTube. But I think this is a real concern. Tony, as someone who has worked in cybersecurity for a long, long time, I would be curious to hear your opinion on, I mean, is this surprising to you? Do you think there are any real implications, or have they just been doing this so long it doesn't even matter?
They have been doing it for so long. And what's worse is that we've gotten used to it, you know, just being, you know, a regular part of life, which is even worse than it, you know, happening. This is like a tremendous amount of information that's, you know, being gathered about almost every aspect of your life. Like, can you imagine what kind of profile, if you take all of this data, I mean, which is literally anything and everything that you've done, where you've been, where you went to school, which hotels you went to, which, you know, which resorts you stayed in, anything about you, what you posted, what you read, all of that stuff could potentially be collected in this. Can you imagine taking all of this data and now using AI to, you know, weaponize it against you or somehow use it, you know, in some nefarious ways, especially in the hands of a government? Like, I mean, that's what I would expect them to do, you know? It's really scary. And but the silver lining about this is that it's a lot more folks are starting to realize that, you know, this has been going on and what the implications of all of these services that were supposedly marketed, you know, to make sure everybody stays safe and what have you, the whole KYC aspect, know your customer. Well, you know, now it's abundantly clear that none of it was for your protection. It's really about, you know, data collection, surveillance, and control. And now in the wrong hands, you've got like almost an infinite amount of data that you can use and an infinite amount of ways to use it. I'm not happy about this, but again, you know, I hope more people, you know, start paying attention to this and, you know, start reconsidering their options when it comes to dealing with businesses that require this. Right now, you know, a lot of these businesses that demand all this information are doing it because, you know, they're just complying. But, you know, if you have enough, a big enough movement that rejects this because for the greater good, then, you know, maybe at some point we start putting an end to it and finding alternative ways, you know, more intelligent ways to remain safe, but without violating every aspect of every individual's life, right? So time will tell what comes out of this, but, you know, on the surface right now, it's not good.
Rick, I'm sure none of this is happening in the UK. This is an America-only problem. What do you think about your friends across the pond?
Yeah, well, thanks for introducing me to The Atlantic. I hadn't read that before. I got about three paragraphs in before I realized, oh, this is some left-wing rag, right? Because what I found most interesting about the article is, you know, they're trying to put a spin on it, right? And they obviously hate Trump. They obviously hate Elon for, I'm sure, many reasons. So they're trying to position this as like, you know, everything was fine, but now Elon's here and he's going to pool it all together and that's a problem. Well, I agree with them. Pooling all the data into one centralized place is a problem, and that is dangerous and it is risky. But what you've got to do is you've got to see through all the bullshit in their article and realize that this isn't a Trump problem or an Elon problem. They may well make it worse, right? Like Elon pooling it all together might make the problem worse. But what people need to recognize, like Tony's been saying, is that this has been going on for a long, long time. You know, it's not just suddenly a problem now that Elon's there. This has been a problem for decades. And if you want to get a sense of where we might end up in the future, just look at China. You know, they have technology that actually can record the gait of how you walk, right? So that the camera can recognize you from how you walk. Like, how crazy is that? So we are heading into this panopticon, but it's not necessarily Elon that's brought us there. We were always on that road. And look, I'm not trying to defend Elon either, because Elon, I'm sure, is smart enough to fully understand the implications of what's going on here, this kind of crazy Orwellian future that we're building. So if he really was the savior of free speech and freedom and all of this stuff, then he would know that the only solution to this is to stop tracking everything that everybody's doing. Like, destroy it. Don't find new ways to use it and conglomerate it and use it to oppress people. Like, if he really is a man of the people and wants people to be free, then he should be acting to try and dismantle it, not change it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one place where I sympathize is my impression is we have a real migration crisis on our hands. I mean, the estimates range from 10 to 30 million people. And maybe it's just social media, but what I see happening in the UK in many places, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that can be a big problem when you're not vetting who you're letting in. And that's not to say that there aren't bad Americans or, you know, bad citizens of the UK who aren't also doing things, but certainly we need to be more restrictive on that. At the same time, so I can empathize that, you know, there might need to be some work to be done, data collection that needs to be done to address like a particular problem. The problem with government is that's never where it stops, right? And it won't end there.
Well, man, you don't need immigration. The UK has quite a sizable navy, right? And people are coming across the water on these little boats and getting into the country. You don't need a mass surveillance ID system. You just need to put a couple of boats in the water that tells people, no, you can't come in if you're not from here.
Yeah, so, no. Stop. Plugging the dam is pretty easy. It's the fact that we already have the problem that exists today. Like, what do we do about that? I don't know. I don't have a solution. But, you know, I think you could probably convince me that there's a lot of work in the background that needs to be done to identify those people. The problem is then you start spying on Americans pretty quickly. You get false positives. It's the whole thing is a mess. And Tony, I completely agree with all the points you raised. In the interest of time, hey, let's move on. This next one's pretty interesting. So billionaire Tim Draper says that Bitcoin's going to hit 250K and replace the dollar in the next decade. So let's watch this video.
I think that we will no longer have U.S. dollar dominance over the long period, but that's over a long period of time.
A ballpark estimate of how, you know, when Bitcoin will replace the U.S. dollar?
10 years, something like that. Yeah, maybe a little less, because there will be a moment. I mean, the good news here is that banks can now hold your Bitcoin and your fiat currency. And so if you desperately, you're in a, like, you see it on social media, hey, we got to get rid of our dollars, we got to buy Bitcoin, you can do it pretty quickly online. But you don't want to be, you know, in line at the banks trying to get your dollars out to put them into Bitcoin when there is a transformation. I mean, I think stable coins are going to be a nice bridge to Bitcoin. But at some point, people are going to say, you know, why are we, you know, having governments? Whenever there's sort of trust in government, then great. Then, you know, everybody feels like, hey, that's going to be great. We're going to use their currency. Everything's going to be fine. But that pendulum swings back and forth from trust and no trust to trust and no trust. And in seemingly in both cases, with both parties in the U.S. and all parties everywhere, government currencies create inflation. And that means, and if that inflation goes too high, it becomes self-fulfilling, it becomes hyperinflation, and then nobody wants your currency. So yeah, I think there will be a moment in time when there's less trust and there's a need for a global currency. There's a need for free trade everywhere. So this is a time, I mean, I think people should buy it now.
All righty. So interesting stuff. We've got a lot of very smart people in the know who are recognizing the house of cards. And I'm curious, Tony, I bet I know your answer to this, but 10 years on one hand feels like an eternity away. On the other hand, to imagine the collapse of the dollar and Bitcoin replacing it also seems wild. What is your take? What sort of timeline are you thinking?
This guy gets it, man. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 10 years or less, because, you know, as soon as there's a viable change and enough big players adopt it, that's it. It's game over. You know, the copy-paste effect usually happens very quickly afterwards. He's absolutely right. Like, why would you use anything else that still requires trust? Like, that whole concept of trusting a third party, especially with money, that's going to be, you know, refined to people with mental illness at some point in the very near future, because it just doesn't make any sense. We've been brainwashed to think that that's just the way it's supposed to work. But now that you've got a real alternative where you can see the difference between money that you can fully own, that doesn't require anyone's permission to use and no one can threaten to take away from you, versus something else that was created to steal from you on a daily basis. You know, it doesn't take, you know, a genius to know which one they're going to pick. But it's such a novel concept that the majority of the world, you know, still can't wrap their heads around it. They think it's either too good to be true or something is going to come along and like blow it up and ruin it for everyone. But, you know, all that takes is a little bit of proof of work on your part is to study Bitcoin. This is not a fairy tale, you know, internet money. This is real. And it's not going away, and it's not going to go away. And a lot of intelligent people are finally understanding this. And so it was created for 8 billion people. But sadly, the 8 billion people are nowhere to be found. But that's going to change. You know, like I think 10 years, yeah, it's a fair take. I think it's less. Everybody's going to standardize on Bitcoin. I've been saying this forever. Because logically, there's nothing else out there that makes sense now that something, you know, trustless exists. It just doesn't make any sense to pick anything else. So yeah, 10 years, maybe less, hopefully less.
Yeah, my concern has always been, you know, when crisis hits, like real crisis, are people going to be accustomed to legacy tools like gold and silver? And like for a while, that's, you know, people are going to try that. But the more I think about it, the average person doesn't have gold and silver in self-custody. You know, like they might have an IOU or something like that, but it's not like gold and silver are circulating in any meaningful way. And so I think it will become very evident. The more I think about it, the more convinced I am that it's going to be Bitcoin pretty quickly. Because that's going to be the best option, much easier for people to get their hands on than gold or silver. Obviously, all of the risks and, you know, things that come with holding something like gold or silver, transporting it, salability across the globe. Rick, I would be curious to hear if you think this is a take that you're on board with or optimistic or what?
Yeah, I try not to guess too much about the future, right? No one really knows exactly what's going to happen. All of us are just making educated guesses. I mean, you know, I remember 5-6 years ago thinking, oh, everyone will be on Bitcoin, you know, by now, and it still hasn't happened because, you know, as logical as the steps are, like Tony says, for some reason, where is everybody? Right? It's been 16 years. Where is everyone? So that's quite surprising. So I'm not going to try and make any guesses. What I did notice about the video, though, that I think people should be a little bit careful of, is he starts talking about, you know, you can go into the bank now and the bank can hold your dollars and the bank can also hold your Bitcoin and it can swap. And then he went on to say, you know, you don't want to be stood in line waiting for your dollars at the bank. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, you also don't want to be stood in line waiting for your Bitcoin at the bank, right? Because, you know, the whole point here is that you don't need a bank, right? This is something that, you know, you used to hear on Twitter constantly, be your own bank. And that kind of saying is almost like fallen out of the general sort of vocabulary that everybody uses. And he did touch on stablecoins a little bit there. And I think that's something interesting. I think if we want to see a Bitcoin standard very, very, very quickly, the way to achieve that is for people to use it as money and spend it and use it in the shops and use it for savings and just use it for everything. If you want to see the dollar extended and go on for longer, then that's what this whole store of value narrative is about. It's like, you know, take it, park it somewhere, and then just keep using dollars and stable coins on the side. So that will elongate it. And that's a real tussle that's going on in Bitcoin. That's why I think it's hard to call which direction we're going to go in. I think the end result is always the same. But how long it takes, I guess, is how long it takes everyone to wake up, which I'm getting increasingly bearish on, unfortunately.
Well, hey, I've got good news for you. So our next story, this Alex Leishman of River shared this, and he said that types of businesses onboarded to River in the last 2 days to stack Bitcoin for their corporate treasury. And he lists a bike shop, a fertility clinic, an IT consulting firm, a real estate firm, a manufacturer, legal services provider, and a food and beverage company. And we were, I think it was just on our last banter, we were talking about, effect on net, retail is selling to institutions right now. And we were all, I think, very, disappointed by that. To me, the fact, like this is the corporate adoption I can get on board with. And it's not that I can't get on board with, like, you know, I think what Michael Saylor doing is going to make him fabulously wealthy. I think if a private company wants to do anything with Bitcoin, great, it's good for adoption. My complaint with like the Saylor strategy isn't anything he's doing, but it's the fact that Bitcoiners are buying it and they think it's because he's a Bitcoin guy and it's a Bitcoin treasury company that they're doing something adjacent to Bitcoin, and they're just not. You're buying a fiat product. So this is something that I think gives me a lot of hope, and I'd be curious. I mean, you know, we've been operating on a Bitcoin standard since the inception of the company, so it kind of feels like maybe other people are catching up and understanding that there's a play here. Rick, any further comment on this?
That's great news, man. I love to see it. I actually think, look, every single company is a Bitcoin treasury company. It's just that most of them don't have any, right? So like, they're all going to get there eventually. Most of them are just off to a really, really slow start. And I think it's also important to point out that there's probably still a big gap between these companies that are getting onboarded by River to have treasuries compared to a company like the Bitcoin Way, right? Because the Bitcoin Way, of course, uses a Bitcoin as a treasury, but is also using it for payments and to receive payments, to make payments, like the whole thing. So what's not clear about that tweet is, are these companies just using it as like this little pot of store of value, or are they going to start adopting Bitcoin in maybe a more meaningful way? Because my advice to any company that wants a Bitcoin treasury is, do you know what one of the most effective and quick ways of achieving that is? Just start selling goods and services for Bitcoin, and then you can save some of it, you can spend some of it. Like, you can just switch, and you don't actually need that many people's help to do it. You can just do it.
Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, man, Rick is spot on. But this is good news. It's like a stepping stone, right? Like, I mean, you get all these little different industries now that are onboarding to Bitcoin, which, you know, fast tracks the adoption. It's only a question of time before these people realize that, hold on a second, we're not just going to hold it because, you know, we can do a lot better by using it as money. What if we, spend it, replace it, earn it, all that stuff? And once that kicks off and people realize how easy it is and how headache-free it is, because now you don't have to deal with a bank and you don't have to deal with, you know, forms and regulation and all that nightmare that comes with it, you know, before you know it, everybody's on board. And that's what I think Draper was referring to, that in under 10 years, the dollar becomes irrelevant. Well, not just the dollar, but all fiat currencies, because, like, why would you break your head dealing with that nightmare, you know? If you've got a very crystal clear, easy to use solution that you know no one's going to be able to disrupt or corrupt or manipulate. So it's definitely bullish news, and I hope that trend continues, and I hope the use case for Bitcoin as money starts to grow even faster than simply the store of value, because you can't have one without the other. If it's not used as money, the store of value is not going to give you all these glorified numbers that, you know, people seem to be daydreaming of, you know, all day long. It has to be used as money to remain decentralized and secure. So I'm very bullish on this, man. I mean, I've been seeing this for the past 3 years that every day more people adopt it. So the fact that River is actually announcing it officially, you know, hats off to all these small businesses. Well done.
Yeah, Tony, I couldn't agree more. I'm working on a presentation along those lines at the moment. So up next, we've got, speaking of adoption by companies, fast food giant Steak and Shake is now officially accepting Bitcoin Lightning Network payments. And I told you guys offline, I'm going to be taking, I think starting today is when they begun, and I'm going to be taking my family there for maybe dinner or something tonight, and I'll try to get a picture. But it's monumental. So this is, I assume you guys aren't real familiar with Steak and Shake. It's, I mean, it's like a McDonald's kind of place, not as big, probably much, much smaller, but it's a national chain. Like there's, you know, 10, 15 locations here in town and, you know, many more in other cities. So, to me, like this is, I think Steak and Shake has been really smart. I think they recognize that there's this gap where people are beginning to wake up to things like seed oils. And so they're migrating to tallow, and they're being very transparent. It's going to be a process. Their fries are still soaked in seed oils before, but then they're frying in tallow, but they're going to like get away from that. Now they're accepting Bitcoin. There's someone at Steak and Shake high up who's like, guys, this is the differentiator. Like we can be the first mover on something really big. And I think they're just going to crush it over the next 5 or 10 years. And everyone else is going to have to play catch up. So no pun intended. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as a move and what you would anticipate moving. Our competitors going to have to get on board with this here soon, Tony?
Absolutely, man. When you go there, make sure you take a lot of footage about the experience. But more importantly, congratulate and encourage, you know, the restaurant owners and the staff, you know, on being one of the first movers in the space. Like make them feel like they've won something, because they literally have. You know, like imagine being first at Bitcoin and accepting it. And now not only is your treasury growing, but, you know, people know you as, you know, the Bitcoin place now for the best burgers in town. So they're going to attract a market that, you know, they would have normally never seen had they not started accepting Bitcoin, right? So, no, this is great news, man. And, you know, it's very contagious. You know, when somebody's making money, the novelty, you know, is attractive to everybody else, you know, looking at it.
Yeah. But back when I was 40 pounds heavier, I used to go to Steak and Shake a lot. And I've since cleaned things up a bit. So this will be my first time heading to Steak and Shake in a long while. And it's important to remember that Steak and Shake made this determination at corporate. And so like these franchise owners, probably, you know, a handful of them are like, okay, cool, whatever, fine. There was a little scuffle online between a franchise owner and a Bitcoiner because the guy was like, I don't really want your business. I don't want to be associated with Bitcoin. So I agree with you, Tony. We do need to be encouraging these people that, hey, what you're doing, whether you see it today or not, like this is a really good business decision and you're going to get a whole lot of new customers because of it.
Well, the guy who was dissing it, I read the conversation. I don't think he was dissing it because he doesn't like it. I think he was dissing it because he was petrified of screwing it up somehow. Because it was so new that the mere fact that somebody's going to pay him, and he's like, oh shit, I have no idea what to do with this. That's why he's like, I don't want your business. I don't think he's giving up, you know, the wealth aspect of Bitcoin.
I thought he said something about like he would rather not be associated with Bitcoin or something, but maybe I read into it
That's
too much.
That's probably just another way of saying, not saying, I have no idea what I'm doing, man. Please don't put me in this position.
Rick, any final comments on that one?
I assume the guy that wasn't up for it, he must be like an Atlantic reader or something, right? Yeah, look, great news, great news. My favorite thing about this, Michael, is like, I know you're now going to go in and do they sell sausages? I don't know. Can you get sausages at Steak and Shake? Or like, I'll get Luke, our editor.
That's when he was 40 pounds overweight.
That's it. I'll get Luke to show that picture of you smashing those sausages. No, look, jokes aside, man, what my favorite thing about this is, you know how there's the Laszlo, the pizza guy, right? Who spent like 10,000 bitcoins on a pizza. listen, man, I'm going to call you up like in 5 or 10 years time and be like, see those sausages, man, that could have been a boat. But jokes aside, I think you should spend your Bitcoin. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And man, the guy running that business has to be a Bitcoiner. He doesn't like seed oils and is accepting Bitcoin. He is 100% one of these little anon accounts on Twitter somewhere. So yeah, I hope you enjoy your dinner, man.
I will. Alrighty. Up next, we have, this Financial Times. So this gal, Katie Martin, just watch the clip, okay?
Bitcoin is not for the faint-hearted. With no obvious use case, it's an inherently speculative bet. Bitcoin maxis like Jeff and Michael Saylor believe in the value embedded in Bitcoin because of its scarcity. I still don't get this. My teeth are pretty scarce and pretty useful, but they're not worth billions of bucks. Still, for the believers, there's just no plausible way for Bitcoin to crash.
Are you comfortable with so much of your personal wealth tied up in this one thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you how Strategy or Bitcoin are going to perform in the future. My track record here sucks, and I genuinely have no idea. But I would argue that no one else really truly has any idea either, which is why I get nervous for retail investors like Jeff.
Studying Bitcoin.
Oh, man, these people, she did this expose. I don't even know if it was a documentary or what. I haven't watched anything. But to dig in any meaningful way into Bitcoin and to come away with an analogy that your teeth are also scarce. When is the tide going to turn? Please, dear God, Rick.
Man, I mean, so I tried to watch this and I genuinely couldn't get through it. Right. I'm not saying that for effect. It was so. You feel your IQ going down sharply as you're watching this documentary. What's astonishing is this woman's like lead financial markets columnist at the Financial Times. Think of that, right? This is the problem with these credentialized morons, right? Like, she hasn't learned anything about economics since the Tooth Fairy, clearly, right? Like, what is going on in her mind? You also have fingers. I have fewer fingers than I have teeth, right? So my fingers are scarce, right? Like, man, I don't even know where to start with this woman. But I was getting irate about this and telling my wife about it at length, which is a conversation I know she will have absolutely loved. But the thing that bugs me about it is that even if she doesn't like Bitcoin, right? She doesn't love Bitcoin. Imagine having the balls to go and make a documentary about something without doing any research at all, like not reading a single book, not reading even like a handful of articles, nothing. Just wades in there like a dumbass, starts asking dumbass questions, talking about her teeth. Like you have to be insanely stupid to be that confident when you know so little. It's miraculous. And the funny thing is, she talks about her track record on that video. So to add some context for people who haven't seen it, every year the Financial Times asks all their readers, right, and everyone who works there to like make some stock picks, and then at the end of the year they see who did best, right? She came like fifth from bottom, right? So the next time you're speaking to some financial advisor who reads the Financial Times, who's up to speed on all this nonsense, understand that none of them, and I mean none of them, have any idea what's going on. They don't even know where money comes from. They're no concept. So, man, I mean, she is getting absolutely smashed to bits on Twitter, and rightfully so, because if you're going to try and make a documentary about something, you have to open a book. I mean, they had camera people, like how much money was spent on this, the laziness. I mean, yeah, look, I could go on for a while, so I'm going to just stop there, but she's a nutter.
How to self-destruct in 3 minutes. There you go. She's the perfect example. It blows my mind how people, you know, go up in public and make, you know, such moronic comments like this. You know, like for me, I was always raised, you know, with the concept that if you don't understand something, like keep your mouth shut, you know, instead of like blabbing like a fool. But I guess nobody gave her that memo. But, you know, these are financial advisors, man. I mean, my whole life, I've always ignored them and made fun of them. But here we are, over and over again. Sadly, I hope nobody listens to this clown anymore after this charade. But, you know, we're still going to see this. I mean, she's not the last of her kind, that's for sure. And the worst part is, it's probably somebody who can beat her with such stupidity. It's just a matter of time before somebody records it and posts it so we can have another laugh. TikTok.
It's absolutely crazy. I think people are starting to wake up to this, but unfortunately, the fact that the Financial Times still exists and puts out this kind of content means that somebody is reading it, and somebody in 10 years is going to be so pissed at her for using the teeth analogy, and they bought it. To be fair, they could probably stand to do a little bit of research. So anyway, hey, last one. We're not going to dive into this one, but for everyone listening, this is just a great tweet. Coinbase virtual assistant, was your issue resolved? No, Coinbase. Thank you. Okay, so Coinbase sucks. I think most of us know that. We like to pick on Brian Armstrong and his army of assistants. Tony's got a video coming out, so keep an eye on that. It might come out even before this video, actually, but go to our YouTube channel and check that out. If you are listening, I really appreciate you being here. Do us a favor. Subscribe to the channel if you're enjoying Bitcoin Banter or the podcasts. You can also go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you take proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. We cannot help with teeth, unfortunately. You've got to custody those without any assistance. Talk to your dentist. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option as well. So everything you need for your self-sovereignty needs. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, as always, an absolute pleasure. Good to have a laugh with you. Easy to do in clown world.
Likewise, guys. See you next time.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Cheers.